Welcome to another post-game media edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Today is Friday, March 17th, 2023. In a 5-4 pitcher's duel tonight, the Hoosiers came out on top in walk-off fashion for the second time in 3 days. The Hoosiers have now won 2 series on the year, both of them via sweeps. Luke Sinard was electric. He struck out 13 in 6 innings of work, giving up only 2 runs. Tyler Cerny scored the game-winning run on an RBI double off the bat of Bobby Whalen. The media met with head coach Jeff Mercer, as well as Sinard and Cerny, following the game.
How is Brock doing?
He's in good spirits. We'll get a picture tomorrow morning and kind of see where it's at from there. But he's a tough kid, but obviously we're not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize him. And he needs to be healthy and needs him in a good spot. So, we'll get a picture of it and kind of see what it looks like, and then kind of make the next decisions from there on what he wants to do and kind of where we go from there. But I wish I had more, I would tell you, but just kind of up in the air right now.
Do you know if the ball hit him in the head, the face, the nose? Do we know where it hit him?
The nose. Oh. Yeah, him in the nose. Yep.
With Luke in that seventh inning, he said that he was talking to you about that. What was sort of that conversation with him like?
About trying to go back
into the game with 85 pitches after the sixth.
Yeah, I think that the conversation was more with Coach Glant. Just kind of like, so he went 6, right? I know I stink. Mm-hmm. I stink. Dustin just told me he has 18 pitches left in the sixth inning. So once he's kind of said, hey, if he gets to his 18, he gets to his 18, and once he gets there, he's done. So I acquiesce to him on those things when he hits his limit. So, you want a guy like he's super competitive. He would throw 115, but just the temperature and where we're at. But and he was cruising. He was excellent. He was really good. So, but when he kind of came, we had made the decision before. So, I'm assuming that's what you're referencing. But Glant told me he's got 18 pitches left, and so I was like, all right. Well, if he's 18, make sure that Crafty's up and ready to go if we need him once he hits his number. We kind of got to get him from there.
Going to that fifth inning where you guys put up those 3 runs that ultimately ended up being kind of a different difference point in that game. How did you guys maintain such patience with your approach when later on in the game you guys had to turn to being attacked?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One is when you have the umpire that had today's play is I've known him since I was in high school, and he's got
Nothing. I just said me too.
Yeah, he's a good umpire, and he's got a true strike zone. If you throw it on the plate, it's a strike, and if you don't, it's a ball. And so you know that in the game, right? When you get in the flow of the game, you can have a pretty good feel for the strike zone. And there, Morris State's pitching coach is a friend of mine. He was he's from Ohio, and he coached high school baseball, travel ball, and is an awesome. First of all, he's an awesome pitching coach. Second of all, he's an awesome guy. And we had talked earlier, and looking at their numbers, so I want to be complimentary because they did a great job pitching. But they have walks. Walks are a thing, right? So we knew going into it with Heron and then with Helton. Actually, funny thing is my mom had Luke Helton in class in high school. So she taught him in high school, and so she was asking about him last night. He did a great job. But we knew that walks were a thing that they had battled. And they have good stuff. I mean, real sinkers, like low slot sink, and they executed pitches, pressure. But it was essentially like you have to not see a strike, but you got to get him in the zone, and you got to make sure it's something you can handle. Because when you have pitches like that, that you're looking at like 20 inches horizontal, 0 vertical. I mean, like real sinkers. You have to get them on the plate. You have to get them out over the plate. So you're really hunting. If you're right-handed, you're hunting like 3, 4, 5, 4, 5, 6. Like you got to get them out over the plate to where he even comes back. And so pretty much told him if it doesn't start 4, 5, 6 or 3 or beyond, then you have to take out a hand because it's going to be in. And then in a tougher time getting to their glove side, bringing the sinker back. And once you kind of saw he was running the gas a little bit, he lost his ability to really command it. And then you have to hold your ground. And we talk a ton as an offense is when a guy's struggling, you have to get out of his way. Just get out of his way. If they're not playing defense, if they're walking guys, get out of their way. And early in the season, we didn't do a good job of that. We didn't get out of guys' way when they were trying to hand you walks, hand you free bases, hand you runs. And today we did a good job of that. It wasn't going to be the wind's blowing in and it's cold and you got sinker ballers on the mound and it's going to be a really hard day to score a bunch of runs. So you're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to get them in the zone. And when he commanded it early, I was a little bit nervous just because you know the stuff and you know what he's going to do, and it's a ground ball guy. And we've hit into a bunch of double plays, so I was concerned about that at the beginning of it, at the onset. But I had hoped that you had initially hoped the second time through the lineup that maybe they would lose control a little bit, and he didn't. And then I hoped the third time through the lineup, and then their left fielder made a great catch on the line, the line drive by Glasser, and then Pine doubles, and you're like, okay, here. So we started doing more fake breaks and fork balks, and we tried to create some action without, you know, like kind of low risk, high reward action where we can't run into outs, but we also have to create some, just a little bit of anxiety. And then we got to them, you know, eventually, and it would have been nice to throw a ball, you know, in the gap somewhere, throw a single in the six hole or something, but we just weren't able to do it. You know, took a shot there with Hunter. Hunter's been sick the last 2 days, and just kind of asked him if there was a chance for him, if he could pinch hit. And, you know, he just needs to get that ball on the ground. He tried to get it up. And when you try to get sinkers up, you get what you get. You get soft fly ball. So you just have to take what they give you. And today was some free bases in that inning, and then try to get that guy out of the ball game. Because when like Luke today, right, a walk and a two-run homer. But besides that, they're not giving you anything. Like the guy's having his day, and their pitchers had their day today. I mean, that's a reason that they lose that Saturday doubleheader 6-0 and 6-3 at Tennessee, which is one of the best offenses in the country, with the wind blowing out. And it was going to be one of those pitchers' days.
Combined, you were able to maintain composure again, even after you talked about in the fifth inning, but when Brock got hit in the nose and he was down multiple times, how were you able to maintain composure there, you know, for Cerny to get the hit, even after switching positions and then getting the game-winning hit and maintaining composure there?
It's something we've talked a ton about, and we've played a bunch of close games. You know, I would, as a hitting guy, I would love for our offense to go off like it did yesterday, and I think we're capable of doing that any day, but it just hasn't. And so you kind of talk to the guys from the very beginning, from the first day, listen, you know, I don't have the numbers, but I'm just watching enough baseball. 70% of games are a two-run game, one way or the other, in the seventh inning. And you got to find a way to win games late. And so we've been in those situations a ton, which is really good for the course of the season. I would like us to score a few more and not be in that position, but thankfully we're pitching it well. And so there's an attitude that comes from it, and you talk about those guys with those guys often. It's like you have to – being emotional doesn't fix anything. It doesn't solve any problems, and your body can't go where your mind doesn't tell it to go. So I was out there just talking to him. You know, I know Glasser feels terrible. It's part of baseball. Things happen. Guys get hurt. Guys get hit. It's just part of the whole course of it. And I love Brock, and he's going to be okay. And so you just have to move on. And that's why I told him after the game, the thing I was the most proud of is the fact that, okay, so you make an error, get a two-strike, you know, two-strike single in the six-hole, 5 feet to the right, double play ball, and the game's essentially over. Ball slides in. I mean, the game-changing play is Josh Pine's play on the bunt. That's the game-changing play. Left-handed runner, left-handed hitter, can really run. Guy lays a perfect bunt down. Josh barehands it. That is an all-star play that saves the game. Because if that guy's safe, now that double scores three, and we're still playing baseball, hopefully. I have not lost the game. So then they double, and now you go ahead and run second base with one out, and you get a pop-out and a strikeout, whatever, maybe two strikeouts. And even the one, you look at that fly ball that falls, you know, 6 inches foul in the left field line, kind of in the Bermuda Triangle, to then for Seti to be able to settle himself again and go out and execute a good pitch. And then you have two outs and nobody on. Cerny takes a single the other way. You get a pass ball. And then, you know, Bobby's been working really hard. Bobby had a good couple of days. Hit balls hard, just didn't have a bunch of time to show for it. But then he comes out and bangs a base hit. There's just a resiliency and a toughness. Just, we talk about being too tough to quit. Are you too tough to quit? Do you have the composure and the moxie? And you can see when a team does, and we do. We've showed it time and time again. We're incredibly resilient. We found ways to win games. And there is something to be said for learning how to win, building a winning culture, building a winning attitude, a confidence and a belief, not only in yourself, but in your teammates. We've had a bunch of different guys do it. Today was Bobby's opportunity to do it, and he came up in a huge moment and did it. So you're right. There's something to be said for that winning attitude. And that's what they're doing an awesome job of building.
Luke has shown that he can consistently give 5 or 6 innings, 85 pitches, tons of strikeouts, few runs. It seems like a really like a gem from the transfer portal. Yeah. What is the most interesting part of his process from Western Kentucky to landing here?
Luke didn't know he was good. That's, I think, probably the most incredible thing that that, you know, when we first came in and you're looking at the metrics and the profile and all these different things, and I think he had like a 7 ERA last year. It wasn't like he had these incredible numbers, but the physicality, the profile, and the metrics, we changed his pitch usages, and relied more heavily on the cutter. And so it was like conversation. It was like halfway through the fall, Coach Klein kind of brought him in, and we had talked beforehand and just said, I don't know if you know this or not, but like, you're incredible. Like, you have an opportunity to be special and to do really special things at Indiana and beyond in, you know, making, and he does make great decisions, but making, having an attitude and a belief, but also making decisions, selling out, you know, he's completely changed his body. He's lost 15 pounds of fat. He's gained 20 pounds of muscle. He's completely overhauled himself, and you could start to see a confidence build in him. It was like, no, you're right, I am really good. And then once it was going, it was like a bowling ball, a butcher knife downhill, right? Now it's he's an unstoppable force for us and did a great job. But I guess that was the thing initially, was like, hey, you're incredibly good, because he wasn't a super high profile kid in high school. And he wasn't, you know, a super high profile kid in the portal. We love the body, obviously. I mean, he was 6'9", right? Love the body, love the metrics, love the spin profiles. And, you know, I think that's something that's really interesting is, you know, this summer, Coach Glant, Coach Simmons, and the managers created a database that essentially combined with your free base numbers, your strikeout numbers, your whiff numbers, and then your spin profiles, all your metrics. And it ranked pretty much like every kid in the portal, every pitcher in the portal, and all these algorithms with it. And then they ranked them all the way through. And so we went and you grabbed a bunch of those guys that the things that we valued, those guys went to the top, right? And you have to be selective and find the right guys, because if you get transfers that are draft eligible and they're off the charts, they're going to sign, right? And so you don't want to lose guys. So we really tried to find, you know, a couple of grad transfers that had low walk numbers and were managers of the game. And then we wanted to go after some sophomores as well and some juniors that we felt like could really transition with a few adjustments, you know, whether mechanically or pitch profiles or pitch selection, that we're going to be able to transition in and give us stuff plus strike throwing. Even if they got hit, we didn't really care about the ERA as much, because a lot of times if you change usages, then you can get a better outcome. And he's the perfect example of that. You know, I think Cooper Hellman's a guy that's a few adjustments away. Great spin profiles, great metrics. He's becoming a strike thrower. You got to make a few probably mechanical adjustments, but I think he's one or two adjustments away from really going. He's had great stuff in the past, and Luke was another one as well. That's a great question.
And sort of just to go along with that, yeah. Luke has the energy with that starter energy. Like, he's going to go through three times the lineup, and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Has that always been inside him, or and if not, when did you sort of see that progression of that building?
I think it's been in him. I think sometimes you just have to have somebody breathe life into it. You know, Coach, I'm going to word this correctly. Coach Glant always talk about pitchers that dislike hitters. Like, do they dislike them? Do they love the moment? Do they love competing? Is there like a grudge? Do they carry a grudge? They pitch with an attitude. And it was a couple of weeks into the fall, and he was like, I think Luke, like, hates hitters, you kind of thing. And I don't want to make a headline, but it's like, I really think he dislikes hitters. And you can see it, the way he pitches, his attitude. And a lot of times you just need somebody to breathe life into you. And Coach Klant is a wonderful pitching coach. And Coach Klant has an attitude. There's an edge, right? He is brutally honest. It is just the facts, man. He's going to tell you just what he thinks. And I think that knowing that he's not going to sugarcoat anything when he tells you, like, you're special. Like, do you know you're special? And I think that breathes life into you, a little bit of confidence. And you give someone that's as talented as he is, which he is incredibly talented, and you give him some confidence and belief, and you breathe life into him, and you make a few adjustments, and it's like, no, you're right, I am really good. And he's done that. You know, it was pretty early on in the fall that we thought, man, oh, man, we think we got one here. And, again, he was always talented. He always had good stuff. He was a good pitcher. I don't want to seem like, you know, we did this, you know, overhaul, because we really didn't. But I think your job as a coach is to provide a development avenue and a development plan, and then to push them and be hard on them, but also when the time is right to breathe confidence into them and to tell them you believe in them. And if you lie to a guy early and you tell him like, hey, you're awesome, you got it all figured out, you're terrific, the kids eventually know that you're lying to them. You're just trying to build confidence. But if you're hard on them and you tell them the truth, hey, when you stink, you stink. Like, you stunk today. You were not any good. Like, your swings were bad. You're mechanically not right. Whatever it is, if you're pitching and you stink, like, someone needs to tell you that that wasn't very good and that wasn't good enough and you're better than that. But when you're hard on them and then the first time you tell them, like, that's really good and I believe in you, I think it carries more weight. And I think that's what you're seeing with Luke, too.
Fun question. Did you fill out a bracket this weekend for NCAA? And how happy are you for the series to be over so you can watch IU and watch the rest of the tournament if you're into that at all?
It's funny. I haven't filled out a bracket since I was probably in high school. I always think about doing it, and then it's always this time of the year, and you're looking at numbers, and it's like, oh, yeah, the tournament starts. And then I'm like three games late, and I'm like, ah, it's fine. Yeah, Coach Simmons was telling me today his bracket got blown up by somebody, and I said, well, I didn't even fill one out, so don't feel too bad. But I didn't. But I am super excited to watch the game tonight. I'm not a night owl. I put the kids to bed at 8:30 or 9, and I'm usually in bed right thereafter. And so I don't know, I'm not sure if I'll make it. I told my wife this morning, I was like, I hope we're up by about 15 at halftime because I'm going to bed. I'll say that now and knock on wood. But no, it's funny. The last time I filled out a bracket, this is a long time ago. The last time I filled out a bracket, I was in high school. And it was the year that Indiana went to the championship game. And I was the biggest IU basketball fan, right? Jared Jeffries and all those guys. And I remember thinking at the time, I loved recruiting, even as a young kid. And I remember thinking, you know, Jared Jeffries is going to sign, he's going to lead and go pro after this year. So this is our year to make a run if we're going to make a run because we had the shooters. And so I filled out a bracket, and then I was in one of those student groups that we did some work with the community. And so I remember I filled it out, and then, you know, I picked Indiana to win it because obviously I'm an IU guy. And I ended up winning it. Like, I won through all my class, you know, and I was, you know, talking crap and rubbing their noses in it. And I remember thinking, like, and then Jared Jeffries, I think he was like the 15th pick, 14th pick, but he did what he was supposed to do. You know, he came in, he missed your basketball and led him to the championship game, and just incredible memories. So I guess that was the last time I did it, and I thought I might as well finish while I'm on top. So I'm never gonna top that, so I might as well finish while I'm on top, and I hung him up.
One quick question about the usage of pitchers. Did you intentionally go left, right, left by putting Kraft in the middle?
Yeah, so we wanted to clear the deck. You know, that's why it was so big that we, you know, I'm glad we scored a bunch of runs yesterday. But even in those middle innings where one's blown out, they're offensive, and we want to make sure that we don't. It's like if we can hold Kraft at all, because we knew we had length and the wind was going to switch, and they had the Helton kid who's been their Friday guy, and they had Heron who's been really good. So I knew today was going to be a close game. And it was like we have to hold Kraft because Seti on short rest after Kraft, you know, Seti throws a splitter, but it's not as electric as Luke's fastball, similar profiles, but it's just not as electric across the board. So we wanted to clear the deck with him, and Crafty's been incredible. He wasn't as good today, just wasn't able to, but we've also used him a ton and he needs a week off. But it was just trying to clear the deck, change the eyes, and then hoping with their lefty that the splitter would end up being effective as it was with Luke. You know, Seti's slider has gotten better. They've really worked on that. And so being able to, kind of how Luke's able to hide his fastball a little bit with the cutter, and trying to do the same thing with Seti to hide the fastball a little bit with the cutter and then use a splitter off of that. You know, they got a couple of them. They got a couple of those splitters, but he was effective enough. But, yeah, you're on the money, as always. You know, just trying to, again, clear the deck and give those guys. I think being a hitting guy does help a little bit because you have an idea of how unfun it is, and that's not a word probably, but how hard it is when it's a completely different profile. And we've talked about it before in the past when a couple of years ago when we had the best pitching staff in the country essentially, but we were in a shortened season. And so it was three games a week and we had five starters. And there for like a 2 or 3 year span, we were like top three or four in the country in runs allowed from like the fifth to the seventh inning, which is when games are won or lost. But we learned there, it was like we had power stuff all the way through, but we only played three games a week. And so then when you watched Iowa do it last year, they had good stuff, but they did a great job of clearing the deck and just completely different profiles. And so we've tried really hard to get back to that same model. Now we have more depth on the mound, which is having 18 or 19 guys throw. We tried really hard this year to go to, because we have enough guys to be similar model to what we did, what is it, 2 years ago now? 2 years ago. And then what, same thing as what Iowa did this past year. It's what Auburn does a great job of. It's like it's never similar profiles one after the other, after the other. And having, you know, potentially having Ben Seiler in the bullpen gives us a chance to clear the deck. And that's, you know, I know he hasn't been, he's a good pitcher. We have to find the right spot for him. But he's another one that can clear the deck. You know, when Holderfield got hurt and went down, that was one that we really hoped could clear the deck for us. And then having Crafty, and he could go to be a starter, but you also, 5 innings is 5 innings, right? If we're going to get 5 or 6 innings over the weekend, it doesn't matter when it is, let's just set the guys up for success. We can win with depth as much as you can win with stuff. And if you have stuff and depth, then you have a chance to be really good. We just have to make sure, because I do think we have stuff and depth, it just may come in shorter burst. It may have to come in short burst and then stack those guys up. And we and those guys did a good job. It's just we played 9 games in 10 days, and they all need a break, me included. Everyone needs a breather. Everyone needs a break. But the pitchers definitely, because they've done a great job. They've really carried it.
Really quickly, going off of that, with Seti coming out of the bullpen into a late game situation when he's started a few games, what are you telling him in those moments?
Seti, you don't have to tell Seti anything. He is a grown man, one of the most mature, God-fearing, wonderful, like he is an adult. Seti is completely self-sufficient. His mom and dad did an incredible job raising that young man, completely self-sufficient. So, yes, sir, whatever you need, and I'll go do it. Like, just your best stuff. Just throw your best stuff. Just throw every pitch 90. I don't want to see any pitches 86. I want to see every pitch at 90 as long as you can, whether you're a starter and you just go one time to the lineup, every pitch at 90, throw me your best stuff, and then we'll get you out. And if it's as a back-end guy, just throw every pitch as hard as you can, and then we'll get you out. And he did a good job. I mean, he's on short rest, and we got to find a way to help him keep his stuff longer. But if he doesn't, that's okay. We have enough guys in depth to be able to protect him as well.
And another question about Luke, I heard you saying that I think he was hiding his cutter with his fastball or something like that.
Reverse, but yeah.
Yeah. What is his arsenal, and also what is maybe one thing, sort of like a trademark of his game that he does well to fool hitters?
Well, I he is constantly attacking, constantly. And he lands 4 pitches for a strike. And so we can save one. So like today, Dustin did a great job. He held the curveball until really the second or the third time through. And so, you know, early he can use the fastball cutter and then, you know, a splitter off of that if he needs to. And then he can land the curveball. The curveball is a really, he's so tall. It's such a, that's a downer pitch. And so he's got pitches that go in essentially all 4 quadrants of the zone. Like he can go down, he can go across, he can go down with the split and down with the curve. And the fastball's got a little bit of lift, not a ton, but just enough. But when the fastball and the cutter blend so well, you're able to kind of hide both of them. That's why you'll see cappers, you see squibbers, and you'll see those balls that are weird hit, right? And then you'll see guys be underneath them off the fastball. So I would say that the fact that he's got a full arsenal that he can land and he can get both righties and lefties out. He's quick to the plate. He's sudden off the ground. He has a great pickoff move to first base. You know, we really focused hard on being able to have a great pickoff move to first base as righties, because when you're sudden with your pickoff and you're sudden off the ground, you'll surprise the runner off the ground and you'll surprise the hitter. And you can jump on him. You know, I thought that it was funny. The lefty that homered off of him, he had almost no at-bats or maybe very, very few. And we did a slide step first pitch, and it almost like sped him up, and he homered it. That never happens, right? It always works the opposite way. It's like low at-bat, slide step with the guy that's really sudden off the ground. He's a 1-1 to the plate, 105 to the plate. Usually you get we're trying to get a foul ball. We're trying to get weak contact, fly ball the other way, be sudden on him, and he just like ambushed it and homered it. So, you know, all the best laid plans often go awry. But I would say that the trademark for Luke is his mentality. Like, he is aggressive. He is going to come at you. He'll get his fastball to both sides of the plate. He'll go into righties, and he doesn't, you know, some guys will say you call fastball in, and, you know, righty will cut it over the middle, and the ball gets hammered, and it's like, ah, we can't go inside, because it's like, no, you didn't throw your fastball inside, right? If he hits you, he hits you, right? He's not afraid to get in. He'll get in and up with his fastball, and so he'll press you back off the plate, and the cutter's away. And so I know I gave you like four things, but you know, that's, yeah. So there's all those things. I just think his attitude, his aggressiveness, his mentality. I mean, he's a freight train. He's a freight train, and he is uber competitive. And now he's confident, and you put those things together, and you know, the guy homers, and it's like bang bang, strike out, and you go. Well, you see guys all the time. It's like guy homers. Oh, poor pity me. I can't believe he did that. That's, you know, whatever. And it's like walk, four pitch walk, you know, then it hits the next guy in the back. And it's like, for crying out loud, man, you're fine. You struck out the first nine, like eight or nine guys in a row. Just finish the inning and we'll move on. It'll be fine. And that's what he does. Like, you look up, it's six innings, two runs. But you'll see a lot of guys, it would be a wonderful start. And then a guy gets on base and I don't like going from the stretch. I don't like going, you know, I'm not good there. I cut my fastball and they have a moment, right? And he ain't like that. He was built different.
He did mention that he said he was more comfortable in the stretch. So,
hey, I mean, that's a good thing for a starting pitcher, because you're going to have to be able to give it length. You know, and again, credit to Coach Glant. Those guys, I've never seen a group. And we sat down in the summer, and I do it every year. And you're pretty much, you do an evaluation of the entire program. Every coach, every aspect, myself included. And we always do, it's like, if we fail, we'll fail because. And then you do a complete evaluation, top to bottom. If we fail, we'll fail because X, Y, and Z. And you list your 100 reasons that you would fail. And the worst one being is the catastrophic without notice, right? If you would fail and you didn't even know it was a thing, like you didn't know it was an option. Like last year, we pitched it great in the fall, we pitched it great in the winter. It wasn't a thing. Like throwing balls and walking guys wasn't a thing until it was a thing. Catastrophic without notice. But I think most times you can look at things and say, okay, if we fail, we'll fail because of these 25 things. You rank them out, and you're most vulnerable, then you work on, and you obviously get from there. Well, one of them was like, we're not good enough at holding runners, and we're not comfortable with runners on base. And the most important pitches thrown are pitches with runners on base. Solo homers don't win and lose games. They're one run. So you can't, don't worry about it. But pitches with runners on base has to be a primary function. And so we spent literally the first 6 weeks, everything we did was picks to first. We changed how we hold runners second base. As you probably noticed, like we come set looking at second base, and it's like, you're not going to steal third base. We've given up zero stolen bases at third base. You're not going to steal third base. And so we come set looking at second base, and then the infielder releases. I don't care if you print it, because you can't do anything to stop it. Doesn't matter, because we have inside moves and spin moves. You can't steal third base. And then I want all of our right-handed pitchers to be a pick time of one flat or less. One flat or less. If you can't be a right-handed pitcher and pick the one flat or less, then it's like you can't pitch with the guys on base. And everyone has to do a slide step. And when it becomes, when everything from the bullpen's from the stretch and everything's picks, and now all of a sudden you just get really comfortable pitching out of the stretch. And you have to be able to throw your best stuff, right? We can't be a one, you know, it's like we talked about yesterday with Reisdorf. He's like 94, 96. And then he's 88 to 91 from the stretch. Like, you got to be able to hold your stuff through it. So you have to find the balance. But, you know, Luke's an adult, and he's found a balance on being able to do both. And it's, I mean, I think we're like, we've sold like 25 bases, 23 or 25 bases, like 23 for 27. And our opponents are like 7 for 12, something like that. It's like, it's not, you know, last year was a complete inverse, right? And so, you know, again, we made an adjustment. And a guy like Luke is again, being athletic and sudden and confident. And once you are driven into that, it's like, you're going to be really good at this or you're not going to pitch. And then you get really good at it. And he's made a living at it. So just limiting damage. Limit the innings. Limit. It's like, what is it? The statistics are, if you score 5 runs or more in an inning, you win like 70% of the games. If you score, you know, 5 runs or more inning and then one more multi-run inning, you win like 80 or 90% of the games, right? So if you just don't give up big innings, 5 runs, and we talk about 6 runs or less, we'll win. I think in the last 5 or 8 years, teams that we've been a part of, I've coached, it's like if 6 runs or less, it's like 70% win rate, 65% win rate. So you just have to be in that range defensively and then on the mound, how you limit big innings.
Tyler, what's kind of just going through your head there as you're rounding third on that last play?
I mean, I just got to score. I mean, the ball is smoked. I knew with two outs, you're running no matter what when the ball's hit. So I was just running as hard as I can. Just knew I had to get there.
What was the emotion like in that mob out in the outfield?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, we had that one earlier in the week. So that's really fun to just celebrate with your teammates like that and get that win like how we did.
Seemed like some of the guys were coming out of the dugout a little bit early as you were rounding third. Did that give you any added motivation to score?
I don't really notice them, you know, getting out there early. I'm just focused on getting to the plate, but I can hear them yelling, get on, score, Cerny. So that gives me the extra motivation to run a little harder. So,
Luke, yeah. Another strong outing for you. Just what was working for you on the Monday?
Really, I just had location today. I just pounded them early, like went strike, first pitch, probably, I would guess 70% of the time. Got ahead real early and made them afraid. I made them, I was on the attack, so they were on the defense, basically. Gotcha.
For you, Tyler, is that fifth inning turned out to be key. You guys were patient. You took those multiple walks in a row. If you hadn't been, it would be a very different game. So can you talk about the fifth inning offense, which was all about the patience?
That was a real big inning for us to get to Heron on the mound there. We were just getting him into the zone. We weren't swinging at bad pitches like chasing or anything. So that was really good for our confidence going later into the game to get those runs.
Luke, what did you tell yourself after you allowed that home run? Of course, the wind was going out that way, but you seemed to bounce back really quick.
Oh, I mean, I didn't really think about it. Wiped it immediately. They happen. I mean, just got to flush it. It was a decently executed pitch. You just got to it. But that's about it.
Tyler, going back to that approach, the patience kind of paid off, but at the same time, in the late innings, you had to attack when all of a sudden the game was tied. How did you guys kind of manage that shift?
Towards in that last inning, we needed to score that run to win. We wanted to end it right there. So, our first two batters up got down. So I just was trying to, keep the inning going, get the first base. That's what we've been preaching in the dugout, in the locker room. Just get the first. And then Bobby had that great at bat to send me in.
Luke, you only faced one batter with a player on base today because you had the walk, which was followed by the two-run homer, and then the other guy got thrown out on the double. What was that like having to only have to pitch one batter with a runner on base all day?
Well, honestly, I feel the most comfortable out of the stretch, so it felt really good. Out of the windup, I feel like I have the most command, and I just dominated out of the windup, and yeah.
You maintained your velocity through most of your outing, which of course is really key. It's kind of why you've been the most successful starter from this perspective. What have you done to maintain that throughout your outings?
Yeah, so in the dugout, my routine is usually I sit there until there's two outs, and then I'll get up, and we have a plyo ball that I just throw against the wall. Usually gets me warm right before I go out there, because we only get five throws. And I try to do that every inning, and I go out there like it's my last inning every time, and I just give it 100%, so.
Was there any conversation with Mercer to try and go back out there for that seventh inning?
I tried to go back out there, and I got told no. I guess maybe because I got moved up a day. Went 84 last week, went 84 this week. I didn't want to push it in the cold, too.
Did the 30-minute delay impact your warm-up at all, your initial preparations?
Not really. I adjusted to it. I hadn't started throwing yet, so I just came in here, sat down, relaxed, then got back up, started throwing again.
Tyler, on that pretty incredible play with Carter, did you have any idea where that runner was?
I didn't think he was going to push it a second, so I kind of turned back my head a little bit there to, like, when the ball was thrown, I saw he was like halfway to second base, and I almost thought Phil was going to cut it because I don't think he thought he was going to go either, but he let it go through, and I just picked it and just kind of dove to the spot in front of the bag and slid right into my glove.
Obviously, with Brock's situation there at the end, it's a little bit scary, but you're also comfortable enough to move to first base in that situation. What does that say about your defensive versatility?
Yeah, I mean, in the fall, Brock's pretty much obviously our best first baseman, and we don't have much after that, primary position, that is. So Devin's been working there as long as me, and I've worked enough at it to where I'm confident I'm going to make the play. So, and then just having that experience too will help later on.
With trying to go back out or wanting to go back out there for the seventh, were you aware that you were three strikeouts away from the single game record, or was that just not really a factor in your mind at all?
Honestly, I had no idea how many strikeouts I had, but I would have been cool if I don't get that.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Indiana gets three well-earned days off before a Tuesday home game at 5 p.m. versus the Indiana State Sycamores. See you at the BART.